High Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is High Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are here, back, as we are every week, Monday between 2 to 3, where we discuss education, we discuss chinuch, speak with experts around the world, with doctors, rabbis, professionals, and anyone who has the wisdom to teach us, to learn, to grow, to achieve, to let us be in the world we want to live in, to be the influencers of ourselves first, and then the world, and in between our families, our communities, our students, our children, and just create the world that we want to be living in. And as you all know, we are living in a very special, unique time. I feel like I've been saying this too much over the past few years, that these are unbelievable times, but they are, and we all held our breath this Saturday night, just the other night, when we felt so strongly the fear and connection and worry about the brutal attack that was the Jewish nation and the Jewish state of Israel was under that tremendous attack, and just the time that I don't remember such a thing of us knowing that the bombs were on their way and just waiting, sitting put for it to happen, waiting for 2, 3, 4 hours, just waiting to know and see what's going to happen, speaking to our loved ones, connecting to them, and obviously going to Davin, and beautiful to see how the shuls throughout the community here in Johannesburg were filled and people were davening and praying and hoping that everything will turn out to be okay. And then until the point that we all witnessed the unbelievable miracles of protection that happened. However, that is a part that we witnessed this weekend of an ongoing situation of at least 6 months of worry, fear, stress, concern, and a lot of, I don't even know what, a lot of things happening, a lot of worries happening, and that is definitely putting us under tremendous amount of pressure and exposing our children at a very young age already to what is happening. If I remember growing up with previous wars, adults had the power to tell us what they wanted to tell us. They had the power to control what we knew. We do not have that today with our children. At least that's what I think. And we really need to know what we do have the power to do and to manage and to help and to support. And to understand that, for that I have with me today for this hour in the afternoon, Rabbi Dr. David Fox. Rabbi Fox, he is a forensic and clinical psychologist and the director of the Crisis Intervention Trauma and Bereavement Support Services for High Lifeline. So he's the director for High Lifeline, and he's put out an amazing guideline, I think, to approach children and how to manage the situation. And I think we need to discuss, and we need to see where we are, what are we sharing, what are we approaching, and what we can do to support our families and communities. So I've said quite enough and maybe too much a bit. So let's go right to it. Good afternoon, Rabbi David Fox. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Sure. Honored to be part of your program again.
Okay. So, watching what happened after Saturday night, I mean, I'm assuming since I do know that the Dr. Rabbi is sitting in California, so I don't know how much you were able to watch and experience it live. But from our experiences, is this something that we've had in the past, something we could learn from to approach our children, approach our families, manage? Or this is a new idea that we have the knowledge ahead of time and we're just sitting and waiting for hours to know what will be the result?
Sure. Well, there's fear and there's anxiety. And fear is when we're in the middle of a crisis, when we're under fire, figuratively or literally. And then there is anxiety, which often involves the anticipation of something bad happening. And anxiety is much more diffuse, much more vague. And when we alert children to something bad on the horizon, this, of course, in many children is going to spark anxiety, it's going to spark worry, and we have to be very circumspect, very prudent with what we say, depending on their age, depending on their maturity. And of course, if they are feeling anxious, we have to have tools to assist them in coping.
So let's discuss the guidelines, a bit of how we approach and what we need to discuss with our children and share. But potentially, maybe before we go there, we can create some kind of age group that when we want to discuss trauma, I'm assuming that we would not approach a 8-year-old as we would approach a 14-year-old, not with the knowledge again and the information they have, etc. So what would be the different age groups that we would discuss as we go through the show and, you know, the different approaches that we need to look at?
Okay, so I'm going to give you some broad stroke age classifications. And of course, they are not precise. They vary with the maturity of the youngster, the intellectual level of the youngster, and also whether or not that child has had prior exposure to trauma of any sort at all. Okay. But in just very general terms, younger children, and I'll say right now children who are 5 and younger, so they don't anticipate into the future more than a couple of minutes, which means if you tell them something is going to be happening eventually or soon or tomorrow or next week, that's not something that they can sink their intellectual teeth in. That doesn't hold traction with them. And as a result, if you start telling them about a risk that might occur in the future, this is going to engender in them needless frenzy, needless worry, because they don't have a marker in their mind to think clearly about something that's not happening in the immediate moment. So we have to be very careful not to flood young children with images, with shocking information, information that will cognitively go over their head, but yet might spark emotionally avoidable distress in them.
Is there a benefit of discussing anything that can come or should or potentially will come, or should we just address for the past or what already happened or facts or reality instead of, you know, we're worried about something that's about to come?
Okay, so two things. The question's a perceptive question. The first thing is that to tell the youngster about the risk of something that might happen in the future, I think, is something that we can abstain from. When they're younger, there's no point in giving them that information. Secondly, we do have a task as parents or as adults to mask from them our own worry. They will pick up on our distress. They'll pick up on the fact that our faces look apprehensive, and because they won't have anything they can anchor that in, this will cause avoidable distress in youngsters. So generally speaking, if something is not affecting them personally, it's not in their personal immediate future, but it's more something out there, something that might involve, God forbid, bad news from remote distance, even though we're talking about the Holy Land, about Israel, we have nothing to gain by informing a child in advance. And that's that age range. Do you want to talk about other age ranges?
I do. So we do need to take our first ad break. And when we come back, we'll continue with our next ages and exploring a bit more of this. Quick break.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and I'm here in a, I wouldn't say middle, because we just started, but a very fascinating discussion here with Rabbi Dr. David Fox, who is the director of Chai Lifeline Crisis Services. He's actually a forensic and clinical psychologist, and as I said, the director of the services at Chai Lifeline, and a rabbi. So we just started with discussing the different age groups and how to address worries and fears about trauma coming. And Rabbi, right before the break, spoke about, number one, that when we're talking about the age group of under 5 years old, five and under, that there isn't really any benefit in predicting the events to come, the future, as children at that age still struggle with timelines and understanding what and how, and just going to create stress. And in passing, Rabbi mentioned as well to be quite aware of us masking our emotions and how we feel, which maybe we need to talk a bit more about, just this concept of masking our emotions in order to show the children we're still calm and control and in that space. So Rabbi, I want to go back to that comment and just ask, when we talk about masking, does that mean we want to show the children that they're safe, they can rely on us and we're strong, or actually not even to show them that we are going through some kind of emotional reaction? Or is it just not normal for them to see that we're going through some kind of emotional situation or fear or worry, etc.?
Okay, so there's certainly situations where a parent or an adult is suffering, is in distress, is feeling very sad, and it's healthy to model that within reason, even for younger children. It's not wrong, for example, if an adult is struggling with loss and they're feeling sad, to acknowledge that in the presence of the child. However, there are two rules that we follow. The first is that we don't want the parent's reaction to be frightening to the child, as if the child will view the parent as no longer in control or no longer a safe and dependable, stable person. And secondly, we don't want the child to contract that sadness over something that doesn't pertain to them. That's almost torturous to a child if he suddenly feels that he can't have fun, he can't be smiling, he can't be feeling good things because of the home atmosphere. So we have to be very careful with the messages that we send our children, particularly if we don't have the ability to explain to that child in a way that will be helpful to the child why we're going through whatever we're feeling.
So at that age, which we're talking about the age of up to five, is that still a stage in life that the child potentially doesn't have their empathy developed enough that they would realize that if the parent feels this way, they would potentially think that means I also need to be stressed, I also need to be sad, I also need to be stuck, without being able to define and say, no, I could just understand how my parent feels or the adult feels, but it doesn't reflect on what I'm meant to feel or behave or understand. Is there a bit of a lost still?
So it's almost without exception true what you said, that younger children don't have the neurological capacity for empathy. It's highly, highly unusual for a child lower than 8 or even lower than 10 to demonstrate the ability to step outside of themselves and to be empathic about someone else's reaction without over-identifying with that, without being drawn into that reaction themselves. We as adults have that capacity. Many teenagers develop that capacity, and sometimes we see this just before adolescence, a youngster can look at someone else's distress, whether it's a parent, whether it's a classmate, and be empathic and sensitive towards that person, but without having to personally identify with their struggle. Younger children don't have that ability. And if they see an adult feels bad, they're going to use their own emotions as their frame of reference. And they're either going to be immune to whatever that parent is saying or showing, or they're going to burst into tears themselves. So empathy is not something we find in younger children.
Okay, amazing and quite fascinating. What would be the next age group that we want to look at when we're talking about older than five?
Okay, so school age, what here in America, what we call school age children, which would be children who are 6 and 7 and 8. So when they hear about bad news or the anticipation of bad news, depending on how it's presented, if they see that the adult is frightened, they may become agitated. If they see that the adult is grief-stricken, they may begin to feel that dampening or flattening of their own mood. But much of the time when children, the elementary school age child, when a parent or an adult or a teacher explains to them about bad news, their reflexive reaction is to ask a lot of questions. And they can seem like trivial questions to us, like, well, when did that happen? Well, how do you know? How many people? What type of missiles did they use? Exactly how far did they fly? And they may ask these types of questions because their minds are trying to grasp what is being said, and their mind is working quicker at that age than their heart is, than their emotions are. So a parent has to become, has to expect that the child may respond with a bunch of questions and not have the emotional reaction the parent hoped for. And then they're going to be upset with the child that, why didn't my child show more empathy? And of course, we've explained that children don't really have that capacity when they're young.
Would it not be fair to say, I'm just about the point the rabbi is mentioning, is that, yeah, you know, part of the reason we can have empathy is because when we hear the story or we hear the details, we're able to fill in the blanks. We're able to understand the situation, reframe it, and get the understanding of the emotion that's connected to it. But a child that hasn't developed enough of their theory of mind and enough of their ability to see the world through other people's eyes, they actually need to ask the questions in order to fill in those gaps because they cannot do it on their own.
Yes, that's a very fine explanation of why there is that questioning. It's their effort to try making sense of what's being said. It's also a distraction. All those questions are a cognitive distraction from something that they sense from the adult is bad news or is frightening news. Children also will ask a lot of questions when they hear about something scary or about something sad, because they want to try understanding. They want to try figuring this out. Maybe they want to try coming up with a solution. But we've got to be mindful that unless something relates very personally to a child, they may or may not show that emotional reaction. I'm thinking of something we see a lot. Sometimes in our work, we have to notify, or we have to guide a parent about notifying a child about the death of someone that they knew. And so much of the time, that young child's reaction is going to be something like, well, who's going to drive me to school? Or who's going to make me lunch? And it's not that they're being callous, but they are thinking about themselves. They're not thinking about the circumstance. They're not thinking about the other person.
And where the fright comes in. But here we're starting to see at that age, school, the big questions that we have about, you know, the balance between should I tell the child in advance that something could be happening, would be happening, and create that anxiety and worry, or rather not say, but carry the risk that it will happen when the child's in school, and then the child will hear from his friends inaccurate information, dramatic information, or he'll hear it in a place, or she'll hear it in a place that nobody can hold them emotionally when they get it. How do we start balancing that, those kind of decision-making towards approaching things with our children?
Right. So in our times with media and with smartphones and with news broadcasts and television and radio programs and with the street and the playground and the classroom, so we've got to recognize that our school-age children are going to hear something from someone. from some source, and it's always better to hear it from a caring, responsible adult, such as a parent, than to pick up the rumors and the gossip and the misinformation from school or from the television and so on. So if we're quite certain that our child has access to that information, so preemptively we are going to let them know that this is what's going on. You may be hearing this, your friends may be talking about that, and this is what's important for you to know right now, and to give that child a chance to process with his or her questions, their confusion, their uncertainty, and to also talk with them a little bit proactively about the range of feelings that they may begin to have if the news materializes when they hear about it. We always let a child know that if you hear something and you don't know it's true, don't repeat it even to your best friend until you've checked it out with your parent or with your teacher or with your rabbi, as the case may be. And secondly, that if you've heard news that distresses you, come to me, come to your father, come to your mother, and let's talk it through. But we do want to give the child the keys to process through their reactions when the frightening or the scary news happens. We never want a child to bottle it in. And we never want that child only turning to a friend their own age who doesn't yet have the maturity to be helpful to this child.
So then potentially even before the event happened, rather share it ahead of time when you know it's going to be safe and contained and emotionally supported, and have the awareness, even if it does create a bit of preempting and anxiety there, it will still be better than hearing horrific things with no holding or anything around, which is obviously a very fine line to balance, but kind of be aware of those points.
Yes, and let me offer a two-part caveat to that. And the first is that gauge how much information your child needs to hear. They don't need to know everything you've heard because they can't understand everything that you know. And so we give them information that they can digest and make sense of. Nothing is to be gained by embellishing or magnifying the gravity of the bad news. That's part one. And part two of that same caveat is that when they begin flooding you with questions, the school-age child begins the barrage of highly detailed questions, you don't have to have an answer for every question. And you can tell them at times, that's a very, very sensitive question, and I don't yet have the answer to that, but I'll look into it. And when I know about it, I'll share with you what I've heard. But we don't have to answer every question. And we sometimes can say to a child a minimalistic answer, because as we said, at that age, much of the time the child is just going to be almost obsessing with detailed questions, and a very, very minimal answer may be sufficient.
Information. Okay. So going through to the next age group after 8 or 9, what is the age we're looking at?
Okay, so when we're talking about children who've not yet reached puberty and they're not yet in full sort of young adult adolescence, they're going to respond with emotions. They're going to have feelings. This is just at the age when they're beginning to discover that they have feelings which are different than their thoughts, and they have feelings which don't always follow a rational course. This is, we find, youngsters more prone to become deeply saddened, to become deeply frightened, to become angry, to become confused. And we do have to anticipate that this pre-adolescent child may, in fact, respond to scary information with emotions. And we never want to be critical of their reaction. We never want to judge them. We never want to shut them down for having that reaction by telling them, you don't have to feel that way. And what we usually want to do instead is to encourage that youngster to give a voice or find words to express what their feelings at the moment are.
I think this is a very important point to identify. And I'm wondering, what is the general age we would look at a child and say, at this point, they're already developed some kind of separation between their cognitive understanding to their emotional understanding and to the ability to feel that there's a separation between what I know and the facts I deal with and what I feel and how it makes me feel and my emotions and where to manage the two and potentially even start influencing each other, but to actually start speaking to their emotion directly, knowing that it's separate?
Well, that's a philosophical question, because in our age, in our technologically saturated age, we are keeping the intellect of our children very, very busy. We are stimulating the fantasy and the confusion of our children much too early. And we don't necessarily spend time with the child acquainting them with their emotions. So their fantasies are things that they're exposed to. The games they play on digital media are such that they're being exposed to, as we said, fantasy, imaginative ideas, deep feelings for which they're not yet mature enough to make sense of or to process. So we do our young children a good service by talking with them about feelings. And we're talking now about children who are 7 and 8 and 9. We would do them a wonderful service to teach them about their emotions. They don't get enough emotional education, although they do get overly stimulated with data which triggers emotions, which they have a hard time managing. But we want to help youngsters process when it's apparent that they're feeling something. We want to give them a language to define for themselves, a voice to express for themselves what they're feeling. And as I said, if a youngster is not hurting anyone with their reaction, we don't want to shut them down. If an emotion turns into a behavior and they're being violent, they're being destructive, then of course we're going to set limits with the child. But what is our parental response when our child bursts into tears? They fall, they hurt themselves, they lose their toy, and they're crying.
Rabbi, we need to take another break, but when we come back, I want to dive directly in there, because I think it's an extremely relevant and important discussion that we really need to have. So a short announcement, a break, and we will be right back.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and in the middle of a fascinating discussion, I'm here with Rabbi Dr. David Fuchs, Fox, who is a forensic and clinical psychologist and the director of Crisis Intervention Trauma and Bereavement Support Services for Chai Lifeline. And right before the break, Rabbi mentioned regarding the responsibility of parents, and I don't even know where to start because I have so many questions and so much to discuss. I don't know if we should take the path about the stimulation that we are giving children today to their emotional reaction and system before they're ready for it. Does it actually make them desensitized? Does it make them oversensitive? Does it increase or develop them faster or slower? Should we go the direction of the responsibility of the parents and where the parents come in to the picture? And as Rabbi said, if you see your child crying and being maybe overcrying or dysfunctional or not, or just having an emotion, or where is a parent's responsibility to come in and intervene? I will remind what Rabbi said right before the break, that there's a difference between an emotional reaction that is not destructive to other people or to themselves, and just an emotional reaction. And I think I'm going to ask Rabbi to guide us into this discussion from that point of view. And I just want to add one more point to the mix that I'm seeing with the kids I'm speaking to and clients, etc. And that is, I'm finding with the young teenagers quite a bit of rage, coming, when we talk about the war, when we talk about attacks, when we talk about the fear of the of Jewish people around the world and in Israel, and rage and anger to a point that potentially could be worrying if it's not addressed, and kind of making sense of that. Where does that come into appropriate behavior, inappropriate behavior? Just because we feel something doesn't mean we need to react on it at the same time we may. So how do we control that and manage it? So I'm just going to throw all of this into the mix and let the rabbi start guiding us into that discussion.
Okay, that's a very fine mix, and I'll try to respond to as many of the pieces as I can. Firstly, let's remember that by and large, emotions are healthy and they serve a purpose, including tears. Tears, we don't have time to go into the science, the physiology of tears, but tears help wash out of the brain, literally, some of the toxic chemicals that are produced when we're sad, and that can lead to depression. So when a child is crying, we don't want to say, there, it's okay, don't cry, don't cry. We don't want to stop the crying at all, because the crying is soothing for a child as well as for an adult. We've all been through that situation where we say, I was feeling so bad, but after a good cry, I felt better. And that good cry feels better because it actually is helping remove from the brain some of the things that are keeping you feeling sad. So we want to allow a child to have that emotion, but emotions ideally have a function. Emotions that a child is feeling, they're going to serve some adaptive function. Even fear in a child, well, fear is keeping them alert, so they're going to avoid risk-taking because they're afraid, and that's a good thing. That's adaptive. If I'm afraid of snakes and there's snakes around, I'm going to be on alert to keep away from those snakes. So emotions generally have a function. Also, when a child is feeling emotion, let's go to your example of the child who's responding to frightening news by getting rageful and angry. We don't want that rage to be unbridled. Nobody has a right to hurt someone else, and God forbid, we don't want a child taking that rage and hurting themselves. However, we do want to find context for that rage. And if their rage is because they're hearing that Jews are being attacked in Israel, or there are anti-Semitic events going on in the streets, and their rage is because they're feeling helpless, and they want to convince themselves and prove to others, don't start up with me, because I can retaliate. If that's the function of the child's anger, get the child to talk about their fear. Get the child to talk about what's making them combustible right now. And there are times when a child is going to need some rechanneling, some healthy outlet for that anger. Go ahead.
Are we able to get our teenagers to speak up and admit that they're feeling helpless?
Well, for a teenager who's trying so hard to become a young adult and has some general idea about being mature and being responsible means that you're not helpless. So it can be difficult for a child to acknowledge when they're feeling confused, they're feeling overwhelmed, they're feeling helpless. But I think a responsible adult can goad the child into a dialogue so that they may be able to acknowledge that this is overwhelming for me. I don't have a solution. I don't know what to do. How am I going to handle this? I think that can be a fruitful discussion for a child.
And to go into that discussion, as the hour progresses, we do need to take another short break. I know we just had one, but a short break, and we'll be right back and we will continue. I'm here with Rabbi David Fuchs, who is Rabbi Dr. David Fuchs, who's a forensic and clinical psychologist and director of High Lifeline Services. A short break. We'll be right back.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back towards really the end of the hour. I'm here with, I had an amazing discussion here with Rabbi Dr. David Fuchs, who is he's a forensic and clinical psychologist and the supervisor for High Lifeline Services. And Just so many questions to decide for the end, but I want to share a interesting situation that I had Saturday night, and I'd like to hear where that comes into dynamics between differences of kids. So knowing that we are just here in South Africa waiting to know what's going to happen in Israel, and all the shuls were having prayers, etc. So I went with my kids to daven, obviously, and we were davening and praying, and one of my kids sent a message to his cousin in Israel saying, you know, just so you know, we just came back from shul, we spent a few quite some time, we were davening and praying, and because they were thinking of you, etc. And the child or young adult responded afterwards in saying, thank you so much, but I'm so happy that I saw the message in the morning, because it would have really scared me to know that you're davening for me. It would have put me in that huge fear. And I bring this up because in the fantastic guidelines that the rabbi put out regarding speaking to children with, I'm going to speak to the producers, and I think it should be on our social media website. I'm wondering, where do we keep the balance between not creating that extra fear for maybe the child that's going through it, and keeping the balance of, yes, it is our responsibility to daven, to pray, and to be able to support, at least through a spiritual journey, our family and friends and our nation?
Well, I'm going to give you a two-part answer. The first is that as children mature, as they begin to reach adolescence, their approach to bad news is to become more philosophical, and they'll think about prayer, they'll think about why is this happening, they'll think about what kind of a God would allow this to happen to his people. They'll generate these more existential questions, theological questions, and we as adults have to respect that, although we certainly want to try giving them some framework so that their questions don't lead to abrupt decisions. I can't be religious anymore. I can't pray anymore. Or conversely, I need to be praying every moment compulsively. I have to be overly occupied with ritualistic religion as opposed to spiritual feelings. So we've got to be mindful of where a more mature child can go. But the second thing is that something we're not very good at, you know, we've published quite a lot on this, is that when I'm having a reaction, especially about someone else's suffering, I've got to be very careful about what I share with that other person. Use as your paradigm the inane things people say when they make a shiva call. They don't know what to say because this other person's mourning, grieving, crying. And we end up saying things that are so reckless, so meaningless, so destructive. So it's a wonderful thing if a child reaches out to the relative in Israel and says, I want you to know I'm praying for you. That's a very sweet thing to say. But we don't know how the recipient is going to hear that. Is that going to feel comforting and consoling? Or is that going to be frightening to them that in South Africa they're praying for me? And we really want to think carefully about what we share with someone else, particularly if that person is the one who's suffering, and I'm trying to let them know that I'm being supportive of them, or as the saying goes, I'm feeling for you, or I'm standing right by you.
I'm thinking of you.
Will that feel reinforcing, or will that feel that I don't want to hear about your feelings, I'm having enough difficulty with my own feelings? And we can have a talk with our children that there's what you're reacting with and learning from your reactions versus what you're going to share with the next person.
Okay, so I guess that's something that we need to have an open discussion and learn and think and see how to address. And obviously, everybody's individual. I do feel that if we would have had a bit more time, we probably would have dived into this part a bit more. And if I'm sharing my emotions about the Shoah, a bit sad that this hour has come to an end, as I think it's a really important, fascinating discussion. really, really informative in growth and learning. And all I could say is thank you, Rabbi, for all the work you're doing in your organization around the world and supporting us. And really, another great show has come to an end. So any of our listeners, if you are joining now, I really highly recommend, and you know I don't say this all the time, go to our podcast and listen to this recording and this discussion. This was Rabbi Dr. David Fox, who is a forensic and clinical psychologist and director of Crisis Intervention Trauma and Bereavement Support Services for Chai Lifeline. And just want to say good afternoon and thank you so much, Rabbi, for being with us. And thank you to Sana for putting this interview together. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show. Thank you to our listeners. And as usual, we will be back. Not sure about next Monday. We are going into Pesach, but afterwards we will be back with our next topic. In the meantime, let's hope for good news coming out of the Jewish world and out of the world generally. And stay safe. Have a beautiful Pesach.